about this copper, then? Is he... How did you become friends? Britt-Marie does her utmost to sound similarly unconcerned when she answers. He's just a policeman, Kent. Kent nods and blinks with emphasis. You have to trust me when I say I know I made a mistake, darling. It's over now. I'll never, ever have contact with her again. You can't punish me for the rest of my life because of just one false move, right? He says, and softly grabs her bandaged hand across the table. He's wearing his wedding ring. She can feel the white mark on her finger. It's burning and denouncing her. He pats the bandage, as if not even reflecting on why it's there. Come on now, darling, you've made your point loud and clear. I understand. She nods, because it's true, because she never wanted him to suffer, only that he should know that he was wrong. You obviously think this thing with the football team is ludicrous, she whispers. Are you joking? I think it's absolutely fantastic. He lets go of her hand as soon as the food comes, and she immediately misses it. Feels like you do when you come out of the hairdresser, after having more hair taken off than you wanted. She places her napkin neatly in her lap, pats it tenderly as if it was sleeping, and whispers, Me too. I also think it's fantastic. Kent lights up, leans forward, looks deep into her eyes. Hey, darling, let's put it like this. You stay here until the kids have played in this cup that the curly-haired one was going on about today, and then we go home. To our life. Okay? Britt-Marie inhales so deeply that her breath starts faltering halfway through. I would appreciate that, she whispers. Anything for you, darling, says Kent with a nod, and then stops the waitress to ask for the peppermill, even though he hasn't tried the food yet. It's normal food, of course, but before common sense puts the brakes on, Britt-Marie briefly considers telling Kent about how she has tried tacos. She wants him to know that there have been a lot of things going on in her life lately, but she stops herself because it probably doesn't really matter now, and anyway, Kent wants to tell her things about his business affairs with the Germans. Britt-Marie orders French fries with her food. She doesn't eat French fries because she doesn't like them, but she always orders them anyway whenever she goes with Kent to restaurants. She always worries that he won't have enough food to satisfy him. While he's reaching across the table for her fries, Britt-Marie peers out of the window, and for a moment she has a feeling that there was a police car in the street. But this could merely have been a figment of her imagination. Ashamed of herself, she looks down at her napkin. Here she is, a grown woman with fantasies of emergency vehicles. What would people think? Kent drives her to football practice and waits in his BMW until it's over. Bank is also there, so Britt-Marie lets her take care of the training, while Britt-Marie mainly just stands there holding on to the list. When it's over, Britt-Marie can hardly remember what they did, or if she even spoke to the children or said goodbye to them. Kent drives her and Bank and the dog back to Bank's house. Bank and the dog hop out without asking how much the car cost, which seems to upset Kent terribly. Bank accidentally taps her stick against the paintwork, and it's almost certainly not deliberate the first two times. Kent fiddles with his telephone, and Britt-Marie sits waiting next to him because she's very good at doing that. Finally, he says, I have to go and see the accountant tomorrow. There are big things in motion with the Germans, you know, big plans. He nods persistently to show just how big the plans are. Britt-Marie smiles encouragingly. She opens the door at the same time as the thought strikes her, and as a result, she asks without really thinking it through. What football team do you support? Manchester United, he answers, surprised, looking up from his telephone. She nods and gets out. That was a very nice dinner, Kent. Thank you. He leans across the seat and looks up at her. When we're home, we'll go to the theatre, just the two of us. Okay, darling? I promise. She stays in the hall with the door open until he's driven off. Then she sees the ancient women in the garden opposite, staring at her while leaning against their Zimmer frames. She hurries inside. Bank is in the kitchen, having some bacon. "My husband supports Manchester United," Britt Marie informs her.
"Might have bloody known," says Bank.
Britt Marie doesn't have a clue what that's supposed to mean. Chapter 25. Britt Marie devotes the next morning to cleaning the balcony furniture. She'll miss it. The women with the Zimmer frames on the other side of the road emerge to pick up their newspapers from the postbox. In a sudden fit of wanting to seem sociable, Britt Marie waves at them, but they only glare back at her and slam the door. Bank is frying bacon when she comes downstairs, but obviously she hasn't turned on the extractor fan. It must be nice for Bank, thinks Britt Marie, not to be bothered about the smell of burnt pork or concerned about what the neighbours might think. Hesitantly, she places herself in the doorway between the hall and the kitchen. As Bank seems unaware of her presence, she clears her throat twice, because she has a feeling that she may, after all, owe her landlady an explanation. "I suppose you feel you're owed an explanation about this whole business of my husband," she says.
"No,"
says Bank firmly. "Oh," says Britt Marie, disappointed.
"Bacon,"
grunts Bank, and pours a lick of beer into the pot. "No, thanks," says Britt Marie, not at all disgusted by this, and goes on. "He is my husband. We never actually divorced. I just haven't been at home for a while. Almost like a holiday. But now I'm going home, you have to understand. I understand very well that perhaps you don't understand this sort of thing, but he is my husband. It's certainly not an appropriate thing to leave one's husband at my age." Bank looks as one does when one doesn't want to discuss Britt Marie and Kent's relationship.
"Sure you don't want any bacon," she mutters.
Britt Marie shakes her head. "No, thank you, but I want you to understand that he's not a bad man. He made a mistake, but anyone can make a mistake. I'm sure he had masses of opportunities to make a mistake before without ever doing it. You can't write off a human being forever just for the sake of a single mistake."
"It's good bacon," says Bank.
"There are obligations, marital obligations. One doesn't just give up," Britt Marie explains.
"I would have offered you eggs if there were any eggs but the dog had 'em. So you'll have to make do with bacon."
"You can't just leave each other after a whole life."
"So you'll have some bacon then,"
Bank establishes and turns on the extractor fan. You might infer from this that she's more bothered about the sound of Britt Marie's voice than the smell of fried bacon. So Britt Marie stamps her foot on the floor.
"I don't eat bacon. It's not good for the cholesterol. Kent has also cut down, I can tell you. He was at the doctor in the autumn. We have an exceedingly capable doctor. He's an immigrant, you know, from Germany."
Bank turns up the extractor fan to its maximum level so that Britt Marie has to raise her voice to make herself heard over all the noise. And as a result, she's almost shouting when she points out,
"It's actually not very appropriate leaving your husband when he's just had a heart attack. I'm not that sort of a woman."
The plate is slammed down on the table in front of her, so the fat splashes over the rim.
"Eat your bacon," says Bank.
Britt Marie gives it to the dog, but she doesn't say anything else about Kent, or at least she tries not to. Instead, she says, "What does it mean when someone supports Manchester United, or whatever it's called?" Bank answers with her mouth full of bacon.
"They always win. So they've started believing they deserve to."
"Huh." Bank doesn't say anything else. Britt Marie stands up and washes up her plate, dries it, stands there in case Bank has something else to add. But when Bank starts behaving as if she's forgotten that Britt Marie is even there, Britt Marie clears her throat and says with irrepressible emphasis,
"Kent is not a bad man. He has not always won."
The dog looks at Bank as if it feels Bank ought to have a bad conscience. Bank seems to pick up on this because she continues eating in an even surlier silence than usual. Britt Marie has already left the kitchen and put on her coat and neatly stashed her list away in her handbag when the dog growls from the kitchen and Bank groans loudly by way of an answer and then at long last calls out into the hall,
"You want a lift?"
Excuse me? Says Britt Marie.
Shall I drive you to the recreation centre?
Asks Bank. Britt Marie goes to the kitchen doorway and stares at her and almost drops her handbag. Drive? How? No, that's fine, thank you. I don't want to... I don't know, I'm certainly not judging, but how? She stops when she sees the satisfied grin on Bank's face.
I'm almost blind. I don't drive. I was joking, Britt Marie.
The dog signals its encouragement. Britt Marie adjusts her hair. Ha! That was nice of you.
Don't worry so much, Britt Marie.
Bank calls out after her, and Britt Marie has absolutely no idea what to say to that sort of absurd notion. She walks to the recreation centre, cleans, polishes the windows and looks out of them. She sees other things now than when she first came to Borg. Faxin can do that for a person. She serves up the Snickers by the door, walks across the football pitch that she used to think was just a parking area. Sven's car is parked outside the pizzeria. Britt Marie takes a deep breath before she walks inside. Hello, she says.
Britt, all right there,
yells somebody and rolls out of the kitchen, gripping a pot of coffee. Sven is standing by the till, wearing his uniform. Quickly, he removes his police cap and holds it in his hands.
Hello, Britt Marie, he says.
He smiles and seems to grow a few centimetres taller. Then comes another voice from the window.
Good morning, darling.
Kent is sitting at a table drinking coffee. He has taken off his shoes and has one of his feet propped up on a chair. It's one of his main talents. He can sit anywhere drinking coffee and looking as comfortable as if he was in his own living room. No one is quite his equal when it comes to making himself at home anywhere without being invited to do so. Sven shrinks again, as if he's leaking air. Britt Marie tries not to look as if her heart has jumped twice inside of her. I thought you were going to your accountant, she manages to say.
I'm going in a minute. That kid Omar just wanted to show me a couple of things first, says Kent, smiling, as if he has all the time in the world.
And then he winks playfully at Sven and points out loudly,
Don't worry, Sheriff, I haven't parked illegally today. I'm on the other side of the road.
Sven wipes the palms of his hands on his trouser legs and looks down at the floor as he answers.
You can't park there either.
Kent nods with feigned seriousness.
Does the sheriff want to issue a fine? Will the sheriff accept cash?
He takes out his wallet, which is so thick that he has to have a rubber band around it to get it into his trouser back pocket, and puts it on the table. Then he laughs as if all this is just a joke. He's good at that, Kent, good at looking as if everything is just a joke. Because if it is, then no one can take offence, and then Kent can always say,
Ah, come on, don't you have a sense of humour?
The person with less of a sense of humour always loses in this world. Sven looks down at the floor.
I don't issue parking fines, I'm not a traffic warden. Okay, Sheriff, okay. But the sheriff himself obviously parks wherever the sheriff feels like parking.
Kent grins and nods at the police car, which can be seen through the window. Before Sven has time to answer, Kent hollers at somebody.
Don't worry about the sheriff's coffee, I'll pay for it. I mean, it's us taxpayers who pay the sheriff's salary anyway, so just put it on our bill.
Sven doesn't answer. He just puts some cash on the counter and says in a low voice to somebody,
I can pay for my own coffee.
Then he glances at Britt Marie and mumbles, I'll have it to take away, if that's all right. She wants to say something, doesn't have time.
Check this out, darling, I had these printed for Omar,
yells Kent, and waves a fistful of business cards. When every available person in the pizzeria does not immediately run to his table, Kent stands up very elaborately and sighs as if none of them have a sense of humour. Then he walks up to the counter in his socks, which makes Britt Marie scream inside, and hands Sven a business card.
Here, Sheriff, take a business card.
Then he grins at Britt Marie and shows her one of them, on which it is written,
Omar,
Entrepreneur.
There's a printing place in that town place. They printed these on the bloody double this morning. Over the moon they were, poor things don't get any customers.
Kent tells them jovially and makes emphatic quotation marks in the air when he says, town. Sven stands there swallowing hard. As soon as somebody has poured his coffee into a paper mug, Sven takes it and walks directly towards the door. When he passes Britt Marie, he slows down and meets her eyes very briefly.
Have a good day, won't you?
He mumbles.
You, well, I mean, you too,
says Britt Marie, sucking in her cheeks.
Be careful out there, Sheriff,
Kent yells in an American accent. Sven stands still, with his gaze focused on the floor. Britt Marie has time to see his fist, clenched until his knuckles turn white, before he forces it into his trouser pocket, like an animal into a sack. The door tinkles cheerfully behind him. Britt Marie stands in front of the till, feeling at a loss. One curious thing Kent can do is that he can feel so at ease in a place that Britt Marie immediately feels like a stranger. He thumps her back and waves the business cards around.
Please, Kent, could you not at least put on your shoes? She whispers.
Kent looks at his socks in surprise, waves his big toe through a hole in one of them.
Sure, sure, darling, of course. I have to get going now anyway. Give these to the kid when he comes in.
He shakes his wrist in a dramatic way so that his watch makes a rattling sound. It's a very expensive one, Britt Marie knows that, and everyone knows it who's ever run into Kent while queuing up to pay at the petrol station. Then he presses the business cards into her hand and kisses her cheek.
I'll be back this evening, he cries on his way out of the door.
And the next second, he's gone. Britt Marie stands there, more at a loss than ever. When she doesn't know what to do with herself, she deals with it in her usual way. She cleans. Somebody lets her get on with it, either because she doesn't care or precisely because she does care. Omar turns up at lunchtime. He immediately starts chasing Britt Marie around the pizzeria, as if they were the last two people on the planet and she was holding the last bag of crisps.
Is Kent here? Is he coming? Is he here?
He hollers, tugging at her arm. Kent is with his accountant. He'll be back this evening.
I've fixed him the coolest rims for his BMW, wicked. You want to check him? He's getting a special price for them, you know?
Britt doesn't ask what this means, because she assumes that some truck or other, despite never being scheduled to stop in Borg, has left the community slightly lighter than when it pulled in. When Britt Marie gives the boy the business cards, he goes abruptly silent, holds them as if they were made of priceless silk. The door tinkles and Vega comes in. She doesn't even look at Britt Marie.
Hello, Vega, says Britt Marie.
Vega ignores her.
Hello, Vega,
Britt Marie repeats.
Check these ultimate business cards, they're wicked. I got them off Kent,
Omar yells, his eyes glittering. Vega takes in this information with indifference and storms into the kitchen. Soon you can hear that she's washing up. It sounds like something is crawling about in the sink while she attempts to beat it to death. Somebody rolls out of the kitchen and shrugs apologetically at Britt Marie.
Vega, very angry, you know.
How do you know? Asks Britt Marie.
Teenager, washing up without being told, bloody angry when that happening, huh?
Britt Marie has to admit there's a good logic to that. Why is she so angry? Omar answers eagerly.
Because she knows Kent's been here, so she's twigged you'll be clearing out.
He doesn't sound too upset about it himself, because the opportunity of exchanging a football coach for an investor in tyre rims seems like an acceptable deal to him. I'm staying in Borg until after the competition, says Britt Marie, directing this as much to herself as to anyone else. The boy doesn't look as if he's been listening. He doesn't even bother correcting her by saying it's called a cup. Britt Marie almost wishes he would. The men with beards and caps come in, drink coffee and read newspapers without any acknowledgement of Britt Marie. But there's a certain ease about them today, as if they know that soon they won't have to pretend not to notice her. Evidently Vega has run out of things to slam about, so she comes storming out of the kitchen towards the front door.
"Ha! I suppose you're leaving," says Britt Marie in a well-meaning way.
"As if you're bothered," hisses Vega.
"Will you be back in time for training?"
"Bloody difference does it make?"
"At least put a jacket on, it's cold out there."
"Go to hell, you old bat. Go back to your crappy life with your shitty bloke."
The girl slams the door, which tinkles cheerfully. Omar gathers up his business cards and runs after her. Britt Marie calls out to him, but he either doesn't hear or doesn't care. After that, Britt Marie cleans the entire pizzeria in grim silence. No one tries to stop her. When she's done, she sinks onto a stool in the kitchen. Somebody sits next to her drinking a beer and watching her thoughtfully.
"Beer? Britt Marie? You want?"
Britt Marie blinks at her.
"Yes. You know what? Absolutely, I think I'd absolutely like to have a beer."
So they drink beer without saying anything else. Britt Marie must have had two or three sips of hers when the door tinkles again. She just about has time to see the young man coming inside, and she's certainly not used to having alcohol levels of this magnitude in her blood at this time of the afternoon, which may be the reason why she does not immediately notice that the man is wearing a black hood over his head. But somebody does notice. She puts down her beer, rolls up behind Britt Marie, and tugs at the arm of her jacket.
"Britt Marie! Down on the floor! Now!"
And that's when Britt Marie sees the pistol. Chapter 26. It's a very strange thing staring into the barrel of a gun. It embraces you, you fall into it. A few hours later, some police from town come to the pizzeria to ask Britt Marie if she can describe the young man, what he was wearing, and whether he was short or tall and spoke with a dialect or accent. The only description she's able to give them is, "He was holding a pistol." One of the police explains she mustn't take it personally because a robbery is only about the money. This may be easy for the police to say, but it is actually extremely difficult to have a pistol pointed at one and not take it personally. At least, that is Britt Marie's considered opinion.
"Open the fucking till then, for Christ's sake!"
hisses the robber at her. She will come to remember this afterwards, being addressed as if she's an instrument, not a person. Somebody tries to roll up to the till, but Britt Marie is in the way and seems frozen to the spot.
"Open it!"
bellows the robber, so that both somebody and the men with caps instinctively cover their faces with their hands, as if this might help. But Britt Marie does not move. Her terror paralyzes her so she's not even capable of feeling afraid. Why she reacts the way she does is something she's incapable of understanding. But there are an awful lot of things you are not equipped to know about yourself until you have a pistol pointing at your face. And so, to Britt Marie's own surprise and the consternation of somebody and the men with caps, she hears some words coming out of her mouth.
"First, you have to buy something."
"Open it!"
howls the robber. But Britt Marie doesn't move. She puts her bandaged hand into the other. Both hands are trembling, and Britt Marie thinks briefly that surely there are limits, but in the final analysis it's been the sort of day that Britt Marie feels has gone beyond the limit, so she replies in a wholly considerate way.
"You have to put in an amount before you can open the till, you see, otherwise the receipt is wrong."
The pistol judders up and down in the robber's hand, equal amounts of fury and surprise.
"Just bloody put in anything, then!"
Britt Marie changes her hands around. Her fingers are slippery with sweat, but something within her decides, against her most reasonably protesting common sense, that this is a good point in Britt Marie's life to stand her ground a bit.
"You have to understand, you can't just put anything in, then the receipts aren't right."
"I couldn't give a fuck about your fucking receipts, you old bag!"
screams the robber.
"There's no need to raise your voice,"
Britt Marie interrupts firmly, and then goes on patiently to tell him.
"And there's certainly no cause to use that sort of language."
Somebody's wheelchair comes careering across the floor and tackles Britt Marie at thigh height, sending somebody, the wheelchair, and Britt Marie to the floor. The sound of the gunshot into the ceiling leaves a piercing ringing sound in Britt Marie's ears that makes her lose all sense of direction. Fragments of glass from the fluorescent tube come snowing down, and she doesn't know if she's lying on her back or her stomach, where the walls are or where the floors. She can feel somebody's heavy breathing in her ear, and far away something seems to be making a tinkling sound. Then she hears Vega and Omar's voices.
"What the hell?"
Vega manages to say, and Britt Marie instinctively gets to her feet at that point, even though her ears are still ringing, and her common sense is telling her to sharpen up and stay there on the floor like a civilized person. There's a lot you can't know about a person until you become one with her. What her capabilities are. The courage she has. The robber turns to Vega and Omar with his sense of shock, radiating heatedly through the holes in his balaclava.
"What are you doing here?"
"Psycho?" whispers Omar.
"The hell you doing here? I waited until you gone. What you bloody doing here, fucking kids?"
"I forgot my jacket," Vega manages to say.
Psycho furiously waves his pistol at her, but Britt Marie is already standing between the pistol barrel and the children. She stretches her arms out behind her to make sure she's covering the girl and the boy with her body, but she doesn't move an inch. She's frozen to the spot, held in place by a whole lifetime of thwarted ambitions.
"That's just about enough now," she hisses menacingly.
She actually can't remember ever having done anything menacing in her entire life. There's a slightly ambivalent atmosphere in the pizzeria after that. That is probably how you'd have to describe it. Psycho clearly doesn't quite know what to do with his pistol, and until he makes his decision, no one else in the pizzeria knows what to do about it either. Britt Marie looks at his shoes with annoyance.
"I just mopped the floor!"
"Shut your fucking mouth, motherfucker!"
"I certainly will not."
Psycho has broken into a sweat, which drips from the holes in his balaclava. He spins his pistol two turns around the pizzeria at eye level, sending the men with caps down on the floor again. Then he stares hatefully at Britt Marie one last time and runs. The bell on the door tinkles obediently and Britt Marie's body starts melting onto the floor, although Vega and Omar are doing their best to hold her up with their trembling arms. Her coat is wet with tears, but she can't tell if they're hers or the children's, or exactly at what point she stops being in their arms and instead they are in hers. When she realizes that they're about to fall, she summons the strength to stand on her own two feet, because that is what women like Britt Marie do. They find the strength when they have to do something for others.
"Sorry, sorry, 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 sorry," pants Vega.
"Shh," whispers Britt Marie, and rocks both her and Omar in her arms.
"Sorry for calling you an old bat," sobs Vega.
"It's certainly nothing I haven't heard before," Britt Marie says to calm her. Gently she sits the children down on two chairs, wraps them in blankets and makes hot chocolate with real cocoa, because that was what Kent's children used to want when they woke in the night after having horrible nightmares. Admittedly, the quality of the cocoa is a little dubious because somebody boasts that it's
almost cocoa, huh? From Asia.
But in any case, the children are too shaken up to be concerned about it. Omar keeps stammering about how they have to find Sammy, and Vega repeatedly calls her older brother's mobile. Britt Marie tries to calm them by saying that she's quite certain Sammy had nothing to do with the robbery, upon which the two children stare open-mouthed at her and Omar whispers,
"You don't get it.
When Sammy finds out that Psycho pointed a gun at us, he'll find him and kill him. We have to get hold of Sammy."
But Sammy isn't picking up. The children get more and more frightened. Britt Marie wraps them up even tighter in blankets and makes more hot chocolate. Then she does what she can, what she knows. She fetches a broom and a mop and bicarbonate of soda and sweeps up the glass and swabs the floor. When she's done with that, she stands behind the till, holding on for all she's worth so that she doesn't pass out. Somebody gets her a headache tablet and another beer. The men with caps and beards get up from their table, bring their coffee cups to the counter, and silently put them down in front of Britt Marie. Then they take off their caps, look down at their newspapers, and start rifling through them until they find what they're looking for, and duly hand these over to Britt Marie. Crossword supplements. Chapter 27. Britt Marie doesn't know if it's Kent's or Sven's voice she hears first. Sven comes because Vega has called him. Kent comes because Omar has called him. The police car and the BMW both come ploughing into the parking area. The two men come stumbling in, white-faced, standing crestfallen inside the door and looking at the shot-to-pieces fluorescent tube on the ceiling. Then they stare at Britt Marie. She sees their fear, sees how they are plagued by bad conscience because they weren't here to protect her. She sees how much this pains them, this missed opportunity to be her hero. They gulp. They don't seem to know which foot to stand on. Then they instinctively do what almost all men in that situation would do. They start arguing with each other about whose fault this is.
"Is everyone okay?"
Sven asks first of all. But he's interrupted by Kent, who points across the premises with his whole arm and orders everyone,
"Now let's take it easy until the police get here."
Sven spins around like an offended mannequin.
"What do you think I'm wearing, you damn yuppie? A carnival outfit?"
"I mean, the real police, the kind that can stop robberies," splutters Kent.
Sven takes two small, angry steps forward and lifts his chin.
"Of course. Of course, you would have stopped it with your wallet if you'd been here."
Their white faces turn red in an instant. Britt Marie has never seen Sven angry in this way before, and judging by the facial expressions of Vega, Omar, and somebody, none of them have either. Kent, who immediately senses his leadership position in the room is under threat, tries to raise his voice even more to take command of the situation.
"Are you okay, kids?"
he asks Omar and Vega.
"Don't you ask them if they're okay. You don't even know these children,"
Sven says, cutting him off and furiously pushing Kent's pointing hand away, then turns to the children and points with his own whole arm.
"Are you okay, kids?"
Vega and Omar nod, confused. Somebody tries to say something, but she doesn't have a chance. Kent pushes in front of Sven and waves the palms of his hands about.
"Everyone calm down now so we can call the police."
"I'm standing right here."
Britt Marie's ears are still ringing. She clears her throat and says, "Please, Kent. Please, Sven. Can I just ask you to calm yourselves down?" But the men are not listening to her. They continue rowing and gesticulating as if she was something you could just switch off with a remote control. Kent snorts something about how Sven couldn't protect a hand with a glove, and Sven snorts back that he's sure Kent is very brave inside his BMW with the doors locked. Kent yells that Sven shouldn't get ideas about himself because he's nothing but a copper in a little crappy village, and Sven yells back that Kent shouldn't think he can just come here and buy people's admiration with business cards and shit like that. Upon which Kent yells that the kid wants to be a bloody entrepreneur, doesn't he? Upon which Sven yells that being an entrepreneur is not a job, upon which Kent rails at him.
"What, so you want him to be a cop instead, do you? Huh? What sort of pay does a policeman take home?"
Upon which Sven flies into a rage.
"We get a 2.5% raise every year, and I have very good yields on my pension funds. I've done a course in it."
Britt Marie tries to step between them, but they don't notice her.
"I've done a course,"
Kent imitates disdainfully.
"Hey, it's an offence to pull a policeman's uniform, damn it,"
roars Sven, and grabs hold of Kent's shirt.
"Watch the shirt. Do you have any idea how much this cost?"
"You vain ponce. No wonder Britt Marie left you."
"Left me? You think she'll be staying here with you, you glorified security guard?"
Britt Marie waves her arms as hard as she can in front of them, trying to make them see her.
"Please, Kent, please, Sven, stop at once. I just mopped this floor."
But it's useless, As each of the men has just employed their respective right arms to put the other in a headlock, and they've started tottering about, doubled over in a swearing, panting dance, and seconds later, with a mighty crash, the front door of the pizzeria shatters into splintered wood when the two men tumble through it like drunken bears. They land in an indecorous pile in the gravel, and in so doing seem to draw even more attention to their physical imperfections. Britt Marie runs forward and stares at them. They stare up at her, suddenly silent and well aware of the trouble they've caused. Kent tries to get on his feet first.
"Darling, you can see for yourself, can't you? The bloke is a complete idiot." "He started it,"
Sven protests at once, crawling to his feet next to Kent. And that's the point when Britt Marie has had enough. Enough of the whole thing. She's been shouted at, and pushed, and threatened with pistols, and now she has to mop the floor one more time because of splinters of wood all over the pizzeria. Enough is enough. They don't hear her the first, second, or third time. But then she fills her lungs with air and says as emphatically as she can,
"I should like to ask you to leave."
When they still don't listen to her, she does something she hasn't done in 20 years, not since one of her flowers was blown off the balcony. She yells,
"Get out of here, the pair of you!"
The pizzeria grows more silent than it could possibly have been, even if a new pistol-wielding robber had stepped inside. Kent and Sven are left standing with their mouths wide open, making noises that would probably have been words if they had closed their mouths between the syllables. Britt Marie digs her heels even deeper into the floor and points at the broken door.
"Get out! At once!"
"But for God's sake, doll—"
Kent begins to say, but Britt Marie chops her bandaged hand through the air in what could probably have qualified as a new form of martial arts and abruptly silences him.
"You might have asked how I hurt my hand, Kent. You might have asked because then I might have believed that you actually cared. I thought, oh, come on now, darling. I thought you'd got your hand caught in the dishwasher or some shit like that. You know how it is. I didn't think it was anything serious." "Because you didn't ask." "But, darling, don't get all pissed,"
stammers Kent. Sven sticks out his chest towards him.
"Exactly, exactly. Get out of here, you bloody yuppie. Britt Marie doesn't want you here. Don't you understand?"
he starts saying, brimming with self-confidence. But Britt Marie's hand cleaves the air in front of him so that he staggers back at the draught.
"And you, Sven, don't tell me what I feel. You don't know me. Not even I know myself quite clearly, because this is certainly not normal behaviour for me."
Somewhere on the premises, somebody is trying not to laugh. Vega and Omar look as if they'd like to keep notes so they never forget any of the details. Britt Marie collects herself and adjusts her hair and brushes some wooden splinters from her skirt, and then places her bandaged hand neatly in the other and clarifies in an altogether well-meaning, considerate way,
"Now, I'm going to clean in here. Good afternoon to you both."
The bell above the door tinkles dolefully and half-heartedly behind Kent and Sven. They stay outside for a good while, yelling,
"See what you've done!"
at each other. Then everything goes silent. Britt Marie starts cleaning. Somebody and the children hide in the kitchen until she's finished. They daren't even laugh.
Chapter 28. Admittedly, it is not the two policemen's fault, it really isn't. They've come to Borg from town and are just trying to do their jobs as best they can. But Britt Marie is possibly just slightly irascible. That is how you get when people shoot at you.
"We can appreciate that you're in shock, but we need our questions answered,"
one of the policemen tries to explain.
"I see you're not at all concerned about stomping in with muddy shoes on a newly mopped floor. I see that. It must be very nice for you."
"We've already said we're very sorry about that, really sorry, but as we've already explained now several times, we have to question all the witnesses on the scene,"
the other policeman tries to say.
"My list has been destroyed."
"What do you mean?"
"You asked for my testimony. My list is destroyed. None of all this was on my list when I left home this morning, so now my entire list is in disarray."
"That's not quite what we meant," says the first policeman.
"Aha. So now my testimony is wrong as well, is it?
We need to know if you got a good look at the perpetrator, the other policeman attempts to say.
I should like to inform you that I have perfectly good vision. I've spoken to my optician about it. He's an excellent optician. You should understand, very well brought up. He doesn't walk around indoors with muddy shoes.
The policemen emit synchronized sighs. Britt Marie exhales very pointedly back.
It would be a great help to us if you could describe the perpetrator, one of the policemen asks.
Of course I can do that, hisses Britt Marie.
And how would you describe him?
He had a pistol.
But you really don't remember anything else, any distinguishing characteristics?
Isn't a pistol a distinguishing characteristic? Wonders Britt Marie.
This is the moment when the police decide to go back into town. Britt Marie mops the floor again, so hard that in the end somebody has to stop her.
Careful with mop, Britt Marie, expensive mop, for God's sake, she grins.
Britt Marie does not think this is the best of days to roll about in your wheelchair, grinning at people. She certainly doesn't. But somebody makes sure she drinks her beer and eats a bit of pizza, and then she hands over her car keys.
I was under the distinct impression that the car had not been repaired yet, Britt Marie bursts out.
Somebody shrugs, ashamed of herself.
Been ready many days, but, you know...
No, I absolutely don't know at all.
Somebody guiltily rubs her hands in her lap.
The car is ready many days, but if Britt has no car, can't drive off and leave Borg, huh?
So, you pulled the wool over my eyes. You lied to my face,
Britt Marie says in an injured tone of voice.
Yes,
somebody admits.
Might I ask why you did that?
Somebody shrugs.
I like you. You're, what's it called? A breath of fresh air. Borg is boring without Britt.
Britt Marie doesn't have a particularly good answer to hand for this, it has to be said. So somebody fetches another beer and calls out as if in passing.
But Britt, you know, let me put a question to you. How do you feel about blue car?
What do you mean by that? Pants Britt Marie.
Then they spend a fairly lengthy amount of time on the football pitch, arguing about this because somebody is quite persistent about explaining that she could, without any trouble, respray Britt Marie's car the same colour as the new blue door.
It wouldn't be any trouble at all.
In fact, somebody is almost 100% sure that at some point she registered a paint shop business with the local authority. In the end, Britt Marie gets so worked up about this that she takes her notebook and tears out her list for the whole day. And starts one completely afresh. She has never done this in her whole life, but desperate times call for desperate measures. She walks back through Borg with Vega and Omar because Britt Marie has by this point consumed half a can of beer, meaning it's quite out of the question for her to get behind the wheel, especially not in a car with a blue door. What would people think? Omar stays absolutely silent until they get home, which is more minutes of silence than Britt Marie has ever heard from him since they first got to know each other. Vega keeps calling Sammy without getting an answer. Britt Marie tries to convince her that Sammy may not have heard news of the robbery, but Vega tells her that this is Borg. Everyone knows everything about everyone in Borg. So Sammy knows, and Sammy isn't answering because he's busy tracking Psycho down and killing him. Under these circumstances, Britt Marie can't bring herself to leave the children on their own. So she goes up to the flat with them and starts making dinner. They have it at exactly 6 o'clock. The children eat staring down at their plates, as children do, who have learned to expect the worst. When Britt Marie's telephone rings the first time, they bounce up. But it's only Kent, so Britt Marie doesn't answer. When Sven calls a minute later, she doesn't answer either. And when the girl from the unemployment office calls 3 times in a row, she switches off the telephone. Vega calls Sammy again, gets no answer. That's when she starts washing up, without anyone having asked her, and then Britt Marie realizes the situation is really serious.
I'm sure nothing serious has happened, says Britt Marie.
The hell you know about it, Vega says.
Omar mumbles from the table.
Sammy is never late for dinner. He's a dinner Nazi.
Then he picks up his plate and puts it in the dishwasher. Voluntarily. Which is the point at which Britt Marie understands something extremely drastic has to be done. So she concentrates on breathing in and out half a dozen times, and then she hugs the children hard. When they burst into tears, she does the same. When the doorbell finally rings, they're stumbling over one another to get there. None of them gives a second thought to the fact that if this was Sammy coming back, he would just have opened the door with his key. So when they tug at the door handle, only to find the white dog sitting outside, Omar feels disappointed. Vega is angry and Britt Marie anxious. Because these seem to be the most basic emotions in life.
You can't come in with dirty paws, Britt Marie informs the dog.
The dog glances at its paws and seems overwhelmed by a lack of self-confidence. Next to it stands Bank. And next to her stand Max, Ben, Dino, and Toad. Bank points a stick, gently poking Britt Marie in the stomach.
Hi there, Rambo.
How dare you? Protests Britt Marie instinctively. You scared off the robber, explains Toad. Like Rambo, that means you're an ice-cool motherfucker.
Britt Marie patiently puts her bandaged hand in the other and turns her eyes to Ben. He smiles and nods encouragingly.
And that's like, good.
Britt Marie absorbs this information, and then her eyes wander all the way back to Bank.
Ha! Huh. Very nice of you to say so.
Don't mention it,
mutters Bank impatiently and makes a gesture at her wrist as if she was wearing a watch.
What about training?
What training?
Asks Britt Marie.
The training,
answers Max, who's wearing his national hockey team jersey and dancing up and down as if he needs the loo. Britt Marie uncomfortably rocks back and forth from her heels to her toes.
I assumed it was self-evident that it had been cancelled in view of the circumstances. What circumstances?
The robbery, my dear. Max looks as if he's working his brain hard to bring clarity to what these two separate things could feasibly have to do with each other. Then he comes to the only possible logical conclusion.
Did the robber nick the ball?
I'm sorry?
If he didn't nick the ball, we can still play, can't we?
The group gathered on the landing takes this conclusion into consideration, and when none of them seems able to come up with any rational line of argument to oppose it, there's not much else to do. So they play. In the yard outside the apartment block, between the refuse room and the bicycle stand, using three gloves and a dog as the goalposts. Max tackles Vega just as she's about to score, and she takes two swings at him with both fists. He backs off. She roars,
"Don't touch me, rich kid!"
They all shuffle away. Omar avoids the ball as if it's frightening to him. The black car stops on the road just as Toad has hit one of the goalposts on the nose for the third time, and it's refusing to take part anymore. Omar rushes into Sammy's arms, and Vega turns around and marches into the house without a word. The goalpost is having some sweets from Bank's pocket and getting scratched behind its ears as Sammy draws closer.
Hey there, Bank, he says.
Did you find him?
Asks Bank.
Nope, says Sammy.
Lucky for Psycho,
yells Toad excitedly, waving his thumb and index finger like a pistol, then cutting this activity short when Britt Marie gives him a look as if he just refused to use a coaster. Bank pokes Sammy's stomach with her stick.
Lucky for Psycho, but mainly lucky for you, Sammy.
She heads for home with Max, Dino, Toad, and Ben in tow. Before they go round the corner, Ben stops and calls out to Britt Marie.
You're still coming tomorrow, aren't you?
Coming to what? Britt Marie wants to know, and is met by a collective stare from the group, as if she's lost her reason.
To the carp! Tomorrow's the carp!
Thunders Max. Britt Marie brushes her skirt, so they don't see she's got her eyes closed, and is sucking her cheeks in.
Ha! Ha! Obviously I will. Obviously.
She doesn't say anything about how it will be her last day in Borg. They don't say anything either. She sits in the kitchen until Sammy comes out of Vega and Omar's bedroom.
They're sleeping, he says, with a somewhat forced smile.
Britt Marie stands up, collects herself and informs him coolly.
I don't want to stick my nose in because I'm certainly not the sort of person who does that, but if it's true that you were intending to do away with this psycho tonight for the sake of Vega and Omar, I should like to clarify to you that it's not suitable for a gentleman to run around doing away with people.
He raises his eyebrows. She closes her fingers around her handbag.
I'm not a gentleman, he says with a smile.
No, but you could become one.
He laughs. She doesn't laugh, so he stops laughing.
Ah, drop it. I wouldn't have killed him. He's my best friend. He's just so fucking sick in the head. You get what I mean? He owes people money, the wrong kind of people, so he's desperate. He didn't think Vega and Omar would be there.
Right, says Britt Marie.
That's not to say you're not important as well, Sammy corrects himself. Sorry, I need a cig, says Sammy with a sigh. And only then does Britt Marie realize his hands are trembling.
She goes with him onto the balcony, coughing dubiously and not at all demonstratively. He blows the smoke away from her and apologizes.
Sorry, is this bothering you?
I should like to ask if you have any more cigarettes, says Britt Marie without blinking an eye.
He starts laughing.
I didn't think you were a smoker.
I'm certainly not, she says defensively. I've just had a long day.
Okay, okay,
he smirks, handing her one and lighting it for her. She takes slight, shallow puffs, closes her eyes.
I'd like you to know that you're certainly not the only one with tendencies to live a wild, irresponsible existence. I smoked any number of cigarettes in my youth.
He laughs out loud, and she feels it's more at her than with her, so she goes on to clarify her statement.
For a period in my youth, I was actually employed as a waitress.
She nods with emphasis, just to underline that she's by no means just making this up off the top of her head. Sammy looks impressed and gestures at her to take a seat on an upside-down drinks crate.
You want a whiskey, Britt Marie?
Britt Marie's common sense has obviously locked itself in its room, because suddenly Britt Marie hears herself saying,
Yes. Absolutely, you know what, Sammy, I would like one very much.
And so they drink whiskey and smoke. Britt Marie tries to blow some smoke rings because she knows she wished she could do this at the time when she was working as a waitress. The chefs knew how to do it. It looked so very relaxing.
Dad didn't leave. We chased him away, me and Magnus, Sammy tells her without any preamble.
Who's Magnus?
He likes psycho better. People don't get scared of a Magnus, says Sammy with a grin.
Ah, says Britt Marie, but it's actually more of a than a huh.
Dad hit Mum whenever he'd been drinking. No one knew about it, you know, but once Magnus was picking me up to go to football training when we were small, and he'd never seen anything like it. He comes from a right nuclear family. His dad worked for an insurance company and drove an Opel sort of thing, but I don't bloody know. He saw me step in between Mum and Dad, and I got a hiding from Dad, as usual, and then out of fucking nowhere, Magnus was standing there yelling with a knife at Dad's throat, and I don't think I got it until then, that not all kids lived like we did. Not all kids were afraid every time they came home. Omar cried, Vega cried, so, you know, it felt like that was enough right there. See what I mean?
Britt Marie coughs smoke through her nose. Sammy pats her helpfully on the back and fetches water for her, then stands by the balcony railing, peering over the edge as if he's measuring the distance to the ground.
Magnus helped chase Dad away. You don't find friends like that just anywhere.
Where's your mother, Sammy?
Just away for a while. She'll be back soon, Sammy attempts.
Britt Marie collects herself and points a cigarette at him menacingly.
I may be many things, Sammy, but I'm no idiot.
Sammy empties his glass, scratches his head.
She's dead, he admits, at last.
Exactly how long it takes Britt Marie to get absolutely clear about the whole story, she can't say. Night has fallen over Borg, and she thinks it may be snowing. When Sammy, Vega, and Omar's father left, their mother took on more driving work with a trucking company. Year after year, when the trucking company fired all its drivers, She started working for foreign companies whenever she could find them, to the best of her ability. Year after year, as mothers do. One evening she got caught up in a traffic jam, got delayed, and her bonus hung in the balance. So she drove through the night in bad weather, in a truck that was too old. At dawn, she met an oncoming car, the driver of which was reaching for his mobile, so that he'd veered onto the wrong side of the road. She swerved. The tyres of the truck lost their purchase on the road in the rain, and the whole thing overturned. There was a deluge of blood and glass, and three children sat waiting 3,000 kilometres away for the sound of a key in the front door.
"She was a bloody good mum.
She was a warrior," whispers Sammy. Britt Marie has to refill her glass before she manages to say,
"I am so very, very sorry, Sammy."
It may sound paltry, and less than you might expect, but it's all she's got. Sammy pats her on the arm understandingly, as if he's the one to console her and not the other way round. Vega's afraid, even though she mainly seems angry. Omar is angry, though you'd probably think he was afraid.
And you?
I don't have time to feel things. I have to take care of them.
But how... I mean, the authorities,
Britt Marie starts in a welter of disconnected thoughts. Sammy lights her another cigarette, then one for himself. We never informed anyone that Dad cleared off. He must be abroad somewhere, but he's still registered at this address. We had his old driving license, so Omar bribed a truck driver at the petrol station to go to the police in town pretending to be him and signing some papers. We got a couple of thousand on Mum's insurance. No one else ever asked anything about it.
But you can't just... Good God, Sammy, this is not Pippi Longstocking, is it? Who will take care of the children?
I will. I will take care of them, he says simply, cutting her short.
For how long?
As long as I can. I get the fact they'll catch us out pretty soon. I'm not an idiot, but I only need a bit of time, Britt Marie. Just a bit. I have plans. I just have to show that I can support them financially, you understand? Otherwise they'll take Vega and Omar and put them in some fucking children's home. I can't let them do that. I'm not the type that just walks out.
They might let you take care of the children. If you explain it exactly as it is, they might
look at me, Britt Marie. Criminal record, unemployed, and... mates with people like Psycho. Would you let me take care of two children?
We can show them your cutlery drawer. We can explain that you have the potential to become a gentleman.
Thanks, he says, and puts his hand on her shoulder. She leans against him.
And Sven knows everything?
Sammy runs his hands over her hair to calm her.
He's the one who took the international call from the police who found the truck. He came here to give us the news, cried as much as we did. It's like having a parent in the army, you know, when your mum drives a truck. If someone in uniform comes to your door, you know what it's about.
So, Sven,
he knows everything.
Britt Marie's eyes blink very hard as they stare at his shirt. It's a curious thing to do. A grown woman on a young man's balcony in the middle of the night, just like that. What on earth would people think about that? I was under the impression that one became a policeman because one believed in rules and regulations.
I think Sven became a policeman because he believes in justice.
Britt Marie straightens up, wipes her face down. We're going to need more whiskey, and if it's not too troublesome... I should like to ask for a bottle of window cleaner as well.
After a considerable amount of reflection, she adds,
under present circumstances, I could see myself making do with any old brand.
Chapter 29 Britt Marie wakes up with a headache of the most spectacular kind. She's lying in her bed in Banks' house. A neighbour seems to be drilling into the wall. The whole room sways when she gets up. She's sweating, her body aching, and her mouth laced with a sort of sharp bitterness. Britt Marie is obviously a woman with a certain amount of life experience, so she understands her condition immediately. The day after, she has drunk more alcohol in Sammy's home than her total intake in the last 40 years, there can only be one reasonable conclusion.
"I've got flu,"
she explains to Bank in a knowing sort of way when she comes down to the kitchen. Bank is making bacon and eggs. The dog sniffs the air and moves a little further away from Britt Marie.
"You smell of spirits,"
Bank states, without quite managing to stop herself looking amused.
"That's right, which is obviously why I feel the way I do today," says Britt Marie with a nod.
"I thought you said you'd come down with flu," says Bank.
Britt Marie nods helpfully.
"But, my dear, that's precisely what I'm saying. It's the only reasonable explanation. When you drink alcohol, your immune system is knocked out, you have to understand, and that's why I've got the flu."
"Flu, right then,"
mumbles Bank and puts the eggs on the table for Britt Marie. Britt Marie closes her eyes, holding back her nausea, and gives the eggs to the dog. Bank puts a glass of cold water in front of her instead. Britt Marie drinks. Flu makes people dehydrated. She's read all about it. "Mine and Kent's children were ill all the time. If it wasn't one thing, it was another. But as for myself, I am never ill.
Britt Marie, you're as healthy as a nut, Colonel. That's what my doctor always says. He really does."
When neither Bank nor the dog answer, Britt Marie breathes deeply and her eyes blink forlornly. Her words seem drained of oxygen when she corrects herself.
"I mean Kent's children."
She drinks her water in silence. The dog and Bank have their eggs. They go with her to meet the football team because Britt Marie is not the sort of woman who bunks off work just because she has flu. The dog makes a demonstrative loop around the flower bed outside the house because it stinks as if someone has vomited there in the course of the night. Somebody is sitting inside the broken front door of the pizzeria, drinking coffee, when they get there. She grimaces when Britt Marie comes too close, and Britt Marie pulls an even uglier face back.
"It stinks in here. Have you been smoking inside?"
she asks, almost with a note of accusation. Somebody wrinkles her nose.
"And you, Britt, have you been, what's it called, on fire and trying to put it out with whiskey?" "I'll have you know that I've got the flu," snorts Britt Marie.
Bank pokes somebody's wheelchair with her stick.
"Stop going on now and give her a Bloody Mary."
"What's that?" asks Britt Marie as brightly as she's able.
"It helps against
flu," mutters Bank. Somebody disappears into the kitchen and comes back with a glass filled with what looks like tomato juice. Britt Marie sips it skeptically before spitting it out at the dog. It does not look at all pleased about it.
"This tastes of pepper,"
splutters Britt Marie. The dog goes to sit in the gravel, carefully placing itself upwind. Bank holds out her stick with her arm straightened to make sure she's out of spitting range. Somebody frowns and fetches a cloth to wipe down the table between them, while muttering,
"Don't know what flu you have, Britt, but do me a favour, huh? What's it called? Don't light a match near your breath before you brush your teeth, huh? Pizzeria has no fire insurance, you know."
Britt Marie certainly has no idea what that's supposed to mean, but she makes a polite apologies to somebody, and Bank, and explains she has a few things to do in the recreation centre, and actually can't stay here all morning making a fuss about things. Then she briskly walks across the parking area, continues in a controlled manner into the recreation centre toilet, and locks the door behind her. When she comes out, Sven is squatting by the pizzeria door, putting the hinges back in. He stumbles to his feet and removes his police cap when he catches sight of her. There's a toolbox at his feet. He tries to smile.
"I just thought that I would mend the door. I thought..."
says Britt Marie and looks at the wood splinters around his feet.
"Yes, I mean, I'll sweep up here. I'm sorry."
It looks as if that last bit is about more important things than wood splinters. He moves out of the way and she slinks past, holding her breath even though she has brushed her teeth.
I'm very sorry about yesterday," he says wretchedly to her back.
She stops without turning around. He clears his throat.
"I mean, I never meant to make you feel the way you felt. I would never want to be the one to make you feel like that."
She closes her eyes and nods, waits until her common sense has silenced the part of her that wishes he'd touch her. "I'll get the vacuum cleaner," she whispers after that. She knows he's looking at her as she walks away. Her steps become awkward, as if she's forgotten how to walk without putting one foot on top of the other. All her words to him are like staying in a hotel, new and curious and tentatively fumbling for switches on the wall, repeatedly turning on different lights than those she wanted to turn on. Somebody comes rolling after her into the kitchen, where she's opening the broom cupboard to get out the pizzeria's vacuum cleaner.
"Here, came for you."
Britt Marie stares at the bouquet in her hands. Tulips. Purple. Britt Marie loves purple tulips, to the extent that Britt Marie can love anything without viewing it as an unseemly burst of emotion. Tenderly, she holds it in her hands and does her utmost not to get the shivers. "I love you," it says on the card. From Kent. It takes years to get to know a human being, an entire life. It's what makes a home a home. At a hotel, you're only a visitor. Hotels don't know your favourite flowers. She fills her lungs with tulips. During one long inhalation, she is there again, at her own draining board and in her own broom cupboard, and rugs that she knows the whereabouts of because she put them there herself. White shirts and black shoes and a damp towel on the bathroom floor. All Kent's things. All Kent things. You just can't rebuild things like that. You wake up one morning and realize that you're too old to check into a hotel. She doesn't meet Sven's eyes when she comes back out of the kitchen, is grateful that the noise of the vacuum cleaner is drowning out all the things that should not be said. Then come Vega, Omar, Ben, Toad and Dino, exactly on time, and Britt Marie busies herself with fitting them out in their newly washed football kits. Vega looks searchingly at Britt Marie and asks if she's hungover, because actually she looks hungover, says the girl. Britt Marie makes it clear in every possible way that she's certainly no such thing, that she's merely come down with the flu.
"Ah, that sort of flu. Sammy had that this morning as well," laughs Omar.
The first little tinkle from the friendly bell above the door, after Sven has mended it, rings out when the men with beards and caps come in to drink their coffee and read their newspapers. But one of them asks when the first match is starting, and when Omar tells them, the men check their wristwatches, as if for the first time in ages they have a schedule to keep to. The second tinkle from the bell above the door comes when the two ancient women with Zimmer frames come dragging themselves over the threshold. One of them rivets her eyes into Britt Marie and points at her.
"Eyo thunshi o trina de mousse."
Britt Marie can't tell if these are words or sounds. Vega leans forward and whispers.
"She's asking if you're our coach."
Britt Marie nods without taking her eyes off the tip of the ancient woman's finger, as if it's about to open fire. At this confirmation, the ancient woman produces a bag from a little shelf under the handle of the Zimmer frame and presses it into Britt Marie's arms.
"Fruit, Edemush!"
She says, "It's fruit for the boys in the team," Vega interprets helpfully. "Ha! Huh. I should like to inform you there's also a girl in the team," informs Britt Marie. The ancient woman glares at her, then she glares at Vega and the football jersey she's wearing. The other ancient woman pushes her way forward and grunts something you can't hear to the first ancient woman, whereupon the first ancient woman points at Vega and glares at Britt Marie.
"Shall I have an extra fruit?" "They're saying I should have extra fruit," says Vega, pleased to hear this and taking the bag from Britt Marie to peer inside.
"Ha," says Britt Marie, frenetically adjusting her skirt in every possible way she can think of. When she looks up again, the two ancient women are standing so close to her that you couldn't get an A4 sheet of paper between them. The women point at her and bank.
"Ye young'un shall take the children and good the bluster fook in twin and tall and bog and it dirt, we in it dirt hire. Tell those bastards there, hire what I see." "She's saying, you and Bank have to take us to town and tell those bastards Borg isn't dead," says Vega with her mouth full of apple.
Bank stands on the other side of Britt Marie with a grin on her face. And she called you